The LexisNexis Corporate and Securities Law Community Podcast. Presentations and interviews with leading attorneys and industry professionals. On this edition, Dr. Frank L. Fine on information exchanges under EU competition law, heading for regulatory overload. The opinions expressed by guests interviewed on LexisNexis legal podcasts do not necessarily reflect those of Reed Elsevier Incorporated, LexisNexis, subsidiary companies, shareholders, employees, or customers, and should not be considered legal advice. Dr. Frank Fine has been practicing EC competition law in Brussels since 1986. He's currently the director of EC Competition Law Advocates in Brussels, which is engaged in the representation of companies and governments in competition law proceedings and litigation. He's a member of the California and DC bars, as well as a member of the Law Society of England and Wales. He obtained his JD in 1982 from Loyola Law School of Los Angeles, where he served as editor-in-chief of the Loyola International and Comparative Law Journal. Mr. Fine has LLM and PhD degrees from University of Cambridge in EC Competition Law, and is the general editor of LexisNexis Matthew Bender's European Competition Laws, a guide to the EC and its member states. He's also written the Emerging Issues Analysis, Information Exchanges Under EU Competition Law, Heading for Regulatory Overload, available from LexisNexis. Frank, it's a pleasure to have you with us on this LexisNexis Legal Podcast from Brussels.
I'm very pleased to be here.
The Emerging Issues Analysis that we just mentioned on information exchanges suggests that U.S. companies can get themselves in a little bit of trouble in Europe by running afoul of the EU rules on information exchanges. Explain, first of all, what you mean by that.
Well, see, what I mean by this is that we have to go back to the foundation of this, and that is Article 101 of the European Treaty, which until a short time ago was Article 81. They're the same thing. It was simply the result of the renumbering of the treaty following the Lisbon Accords. Article 101 is the provision of the EU treaty dealing with agreements and concerted practices which can fall afoul of the competition rules and get companies in trouble, that sort of thing. Now, as far as information exchanges are concerned, historically, the Commission was interested in them because they were an adjunct, a support mechanism, if you want, to a concretized price-fixing or market-sharing agreement. So, for example, if a bunch of competitors making copper tubes, for example, formed a price-fixing agreement, well, the problem would be, well, now that we have the agreement, how do we make sure going forward that everybody's living up to this and all the rest? So, what they might also agree upon is that on a periodic basis, it could be systematized or it could be just ad hoc, they would actually communicate what their prices were to each other so that they could monitor the agreement, monitor each other, basically. So the information exchange in that context was seen as a means of reinforcement of something which was far more sinister, the kind of agreement that most everybody knows is going to be anti-competitive. Now, what is happening and what makes the situation much more ominous for U.S. companies operating over here is that the European Commission, and this is actually being aided and abetted, if you want, by the European courts in Luxembourg, are going after information exchanges absent an agreement. Just the fact that companies exchange certain types of information. We have, for example, a European court case from last year called T-Mobile Netherlands. Now, this case did not arise from a European Commission decision, which was appealed to the European Court. This arose from a proceeding in the Netherlands, which was stayed, and various legal issues were submitted to the European Court for what is called a preliminary ruling. And after that preliminary ruling, the Netherlands institution dealing with that case would take the advice from the court in Luxembourg and implement it and impose fines or do whatever they're going to do, right? So that's the point of a preliminary reference. And in this case, the Dutch authority that was dealing with this was concerned about whether one meeting by the four Dutch mobile operators in that country would have been anti-competitive. If they were discussing a potential reduction in dealer remuneration rates, in other words, what operators would pay dealers effectively. The result of this was a judgment or preliminary ruling, let's say, of the court last year, where the court said very clearly, yes, one meeting can be enough, and number two, one meeting could be enough even if all that took place at that meeting was a discussion of a, let's say, potential price reduction, not even a simultaneous reduction, but just the idea that dealer remuneration, that standard remuneration is too high. So that is a real concern. And then a few months ago, the commission in Brussels took a decision involving various manufacturers of bathroom fittings, toilets, sinks, and all this kind of thing. And a big U.S. company there called Ideal Standard, which is one of the largest manufacturers of such fittings in the world, and they got hit with a 300-plus million euro fine for having allegedly done nothing more than exchanged information. There's more of this coming, and the stakes can be quite high. Fines can be substantial, as I was just mentioning. And the other thing that should be of concern is that in these cases, just like the ones in which the commission is basing its decision on an agreement, right, the commission is more and more relying upon the finding that the object of the agreement is anti-competitive, so that it doesn't even need to determine whether the agreement or the information exchange, for that matter, had any anti-competitive effect whatsoever. Simply by virtue of the conduct having occurred, the commission will infer that there is a potential adverse effect on competition and on consumers, so no effects need to be shown. These are factors which have to be of concern to companies that are operating in Europe, as well as to their trade associations, because trade associations, as you know, most of them, their primary purpose is to facilitate discussion among people in the same industry, and naturally they're going to be competitors. I think everybody would agree, including the European Commission, that trade associations serve a very positive role in the economy. But you can see with the Commission leaning more towards going after information exchanges, trade associations are going to have to be on their guard in terms of the kinds of information that is exchanged in the course of their meetings.
I want to talk more about the kinds of information exchanges that are of concern in just a bit, but why are information exchanges among competitors considered such a serious problem by the European Commission?
The Commission, like the Court, has always taken the view that competitors should not be in the business of making their strategic behavior transparent. That is to say, with each other. It's one thing if a market is inherently transparent because prices are posted on commodity exchanges or whatever the case might be. That's one thing. But it's another thing, I think, for the Commission, for competitors to simply exchange that kind of information among themselves so that they can, so they have basically a united front when dealing with downstream operators, consumers, and everything else. I think what the Commission's concern is that this kind of market transparency is artificial and is designed ultimately to result in higher prices, either because the industry is greedy or because prices are on their way down and they're using this kind of mechanism in order to keep prices higher, to bolster prices. The Commission doesn't care, really, which shoe actually fits, the greed shoe or the let's save the industry shoe. You know, because of this recent recession, assuming that it is recent as opposed to continuing, a bunch of aluminum producers decide we can't handle this anymore, prices continue to drop, we're going to be forced out of business, they decide to concert in raising prices, the Commission would go after that, just as much as in some other industry that has not been affected by an economic slowdown. Anyway, the short answer to your question is market transparency might be good in some certain situations, but if it's being engineered by competitors for their own benefit, probably all bets are off.
So what kinds of information exchanges are of concern to the Commission?
First of all, what I should mention here, before answering your question directly, is that there are horizontal guidelines which are now in draft form, which are likely to go into force in January. These guidelines, like any other guidelines that the Commission normally puts out in the competition area, generally speaking, in most cases, not generally speaking, in most cases, they restate existing Commission policy so that it's clearer to everybody. They take all the different decisions that have been happening, both in the court and by the Commission, and they synthesize it. But I have to say that in these draft guidelines, and there's a whole section that's devoted to information exchange, and under the assumption that these draft guidelines go into force virtually in the same form that they are in now, and I've got no reason to believe that they won't, having spoken recently to the principal driver of this project, I can only say that the rules regarding information exchange are about to become more aggressive. First of all, the type of information that the Commission is going after has not changed. So to be fair to the Commission, the kind of information that would be considered sensitive and therefore coming within the scope, if you want, of a prohibited information exchange would be information relating to prices, meaning discounts, reductions, rebates, and the like, customer lists, production costs, quantities, sales figures, production capacity, marketing plans, strategic plans, the information that could be in the hands of a competitor quite useful for the person receiving that information to adjust their own behavior to be more in sync with the person providing it, with the company providing it. So the kind of information that the Commission is going after really hasn't changed. But where things get more complicated is when information relating to that subject matter that I just gave you the list for, when does that information become sensitive? Because surely if it's old information, right, 5 years old or whatever, of what value is it if Podunk Manufacturing provided its competitors with its pricing 5 years ago? No value. So there is a time element, a currency element to this. Now, previous to these draft guidelines, the Commission said that if the information was more than 1 year old, it was considered historical and therefore okay to be communicated among competitors or through their trade association, whatever. Also, even if the information was not historical, but it was in the public domain, the Commission would say, well, the information is out there anyway. We're not going to go after these companies for having exchanged it because everybody has this information. It's in the public domain. Or at least legally speaking, is no longer being kept a secret. That's perhaps what I really meant to say for reasons I'm going to come on to. So those were the parameters that companies could have relied upon with a fair degree of comfort. But this is going to change. The test, for example, of what is historical is no longer 1 year or older. It depends on whether the information being exchanged is several times older than the average length of contracts in the industry concerned. The average length of contracts in the industry. Now, the guidelines don't say what kind of contracts are we talking about. Are we talking about a particular segment of the industry? Are we talking about upstream, downstream? What exactly are we talking about here? I think that there is so much opacity in that test that it doesn't give companies a very good heads up on what is considered historical. Now, the other point regarding whether the information is in the public domain or not, that's going to go by the wayside too. And what the test that the Commission is going to apply there going forward in January is whether the information is genuinely public information. And what the Commission means by this, and I'm quoting now from the draft guidelines, genuinely public information is information that is equally easy to access for everyone. So no one has a particular advantage, if you want, in getting access to that information. And this, too, begs the question, well, how easy is easy? And how equal is equal? And how exactly do you put this into practice? For example, the Commission uses as a very simple, prosaic illustration of the principle. Let's say that you have four gas station operators who get on the phone with each other and ask each other, what are you charging today for diesel? And all they're doing is exchanging that information. The Commission would say that exchange is to the exclusion of consumers, because consumers would have to drive to each of these gas stations to see what they are charging on that given day. Mm-hmm. So their access is less than that of the people who are participating in this information exchange, even though all that is happening on the call, or the calls, as the case might be, is the communication. And I want to stress this. The only information being communicated is information of what is actually being charged. Now, you and I both know that in the States, and the same is true in Europe, and I guess it's true around the world, that gas station operators post their prices at the gas station itself for everyone to see. One could argue, what is really the difference between that and these operators simply communicating to each other what they're charging on the given day? I think that this kind of, I don't know what to call it, but I think this level of probity on the issue of equal access can cause real problems down the road, if for no other reason than that it doesn't provide sufficient guidance to companies to determine when they can and cannot exchange information which might already be out there. So that's a problem. Another thing is that it used to be the case that prior to these guidelines, that aggregated data, that you know, trade associations, for example, don't publish recent or actual prices of individual members of the association, because if that information is not public, then it is individual competitive information, which if exchanged could land everybody in trouble. So what they do is they aggregate, and they come up with an average or median price. Right? This is what trade associations have done historically, and everybody was comfortable with that, meaning to say the regulators were, at least in Europe and I guess in the States. But where this thing is heading over here is that even if the identity of the individuals who are participating in the aggregation cannot be identified, the Commission has concerns that in an oligopolistic market consisting of 5, 10, maybe even 15 members, exchanging this data could lead to collusion, or I should say a collusive outcome. And therefore, even aggregated data could be subject to a prohibition and, of course, the fines that go with it. These are three examples of how the Commission is, the expression I like to use, and forgive me for being very American here, is torquing up, if you want, its aggressivity towards information exchange by being more opaque and more aggressive at the same time.
But the way it sounds, it's just going to make it more difficult for companies to know what they can and can't share with competitors.
Well, exactly. And a problem, too, is that the Commission is not very receptive to consultations whereby they would provide any kind of hard and fast legal guidance on whether in particular circumstances would be deemed acceptable or not. In other words, you're not going to get a legal opinion out of the European Commission that you would consider binding, or that a company would consider binding. So that's also a problem. So it means that one has to obtain the best possible guidance from antitrust counsel on what exactly the position would be and what the risk is of the particular type of practice that is going on. I'm not saying that it's going to be easy, but what I am saying is that what can well happen as a result of this new policy is that companies will be so cautious as to err on the safe side and possibly no longer exchange information which is actually a benefit to everybody for them to be exchanging. I think that's the real danger, that it could hurt the economy.
And companies are going to have to be diligent about training their employees to avoid antitrust risk, right?
Well, yeah, I think that companies that already have antitrust compliance programs in place for Europe, just because of these new rules, they are going to have to revisit what they've got, because if what they're doing is telling their employees the old rules that I was mentioning earlier, those old rules will no longer hold, and they're going to have to find some other way to install risk management procedures to prevent them from running afoul of these new rules. And again, I'm not suggesting it's going to be easy. What might well happen in the wake of these new guidelines is that the Commission will be forced to take positions on these issues that we've now been discussing, because there'll be a hailstorm of criticism coming from trade associations and companies that find that they're handcuffed by these rules. I think we can expect that. But I do think, as a minimum, companies and trade associations are going to have to revisit their rules for operating, especially with regard to the information they exchange.
So given the fact that the new guidelines are coming out, do you think there'd be any likelihood of more illicit information exchanges?
I don't see that happening, not because of the draft guidelines anyway. You're actually broaching a separate issue, which I think is, if you don't mind, I'll just segue into it.
Sure.
And that is to say that one of the things that the Commission is also seeking to address in these new guidelines are so-called indirect information exchanges, which means not exchanges that are taking place among competitors directly or through their trade associations, but through something totally independent.
Like who, for example?
Maybe a consultancy, maybe a research organization, maybe market analysts, journalists, who are taking information that is deemed sensitive in accordance with the Commission's criteria for sensitivity and republishing it in a newsletter, maybe in an op-ed piece, in a piece of market analysis from a bank, God knows where. But the point is that the Commission thinks that even these indirect exchanges can be problematic. It's looking at new media as facilitating, perhaps, collusion among competitors. I would also point out that as we're talking now about indirect exchanges and the role of these third parties, that the Commission and the Court are making it very clear that they plan to go after third parties who are found to have facilitated, for lack of a better word, this form of information exchange. There are two examples that are already out there that are quite recent. None of them involve media. What they do involve, in the first case called Troyhand v. Commission, which was decided in 2008 by the Court of First Instance here in Brussels, involved a consultancy which actually put together some of the meetings involving a cartel in the organic peroxide sector. So in other words, the Commission did find that there was a real cartel involving producers of organic peroxide, and that a consultancy in Switzerland, I believe it was found to have facilitated. I'm using this not as a term of art, but because the Commission simply said that this organization had actually organized some of the meetings that the cartel had, knowing what was taking place at these meetings. I think that's important. But what's also important is that in that judgment in Troyhand, the CFI said that even though the consultancy called FIDES, F-I-D-E-S, was not a peroxide manufacturer, it was liable as a co-perpetrator of this cartel, even though it did not operate in the very market of the cartel. Granted, FIDES only got a 1,000 euro fine, but I think, as we've seen in previous instances, the Commission normally gives low fines in situations which are novel. FIDES perhaps had no reason to believe that what it did was even illegal. So the Commission put a shot across the bow, if you want, and only fined FIDES 1,000 euros. Well, there's another case that was just decided by the CFI. Now it's called the General Court. This also follows Lisbon. But the General Court decided in early September called Delta Fina. That case involved appeals from involving a raw tobacco cartel in Spain. Delta Fina did not operate on the Spanish market. That was the market in which the cartel was found to have occurred. It wasn't the same product market as the others involved in the cartel, but it wasn't active in Spain. And in that case, the General Court said, you're a co-perpetrator. You've exchanged information with these other raw tobacco producers. You attended one or two of the meetings. You took notes on the agreements that the cartel involved. So as far as we're concerned, you're guilty. In that case, which was the second of these cases, Delta Fina was fined, I think it might have been 11 million euros. 11.8 million. And what's interesting about Delta Fina is that there was no evidence that Delta-Fina had organized anything. So not only was Delta-Fina not in the Spanish market, just like Fides was not in the relevant market for organic peroxides, there was a distinction, and that is that Delta-Fina, unlike Fides, didn't organize anything and didn't facilitate any of the meetings or the agreements or anything else. So you can see how the court and the commission are working together to ramp up this form of liability involving information exchange, and coupled with the idea that third parties who are not active in the relevant market can be held liable as co-perpetrators. And I think the fines are only going to get larger for these sorts of individuals going down the road.
Well, it sounds like these new guidelines are going to force companies to be very careful as far as information exchanges are concerned. But I wonder if there might also be some head-scratching and even more questions coming out of them.
Absolutely. I'm surprised, actually, there's been as little commentary on these aspects of the guidelines as there has been. You know, I wrote the article that I did thinking that somebody has to do this. Somebody has to come out and say what companies can expect with these draft guidelines. I know the commission has looked at my article. At least there was an op-ed piece that I put in the Wall Street Journal a few months ago on this issue, which made the rounds in DG Comp. But to my knowledge, it's not causing all that much of a rethink.
We may have to actually wait until after January 2011 to see what kind of a reaction, what kind of impact this has.
Yeah, I think we can expect an impact. These guidelines are going to be relied upon by the commission going forward. I think it's very safe to say that. So we can expect to see more information exchange cases, and I think more ominously, we can expect to see more of these, I call them third-party liability cases, because even though as a legal result, the commission sees them as being just as much a party to the cartel as the people who are forming the agreements, they are in fact third parties. They're not on the market concerned, either because they don't make the product at all, i.e. someone like Fides, the consultancy in Switzerland, or because they're not active on the geographic market at all. And consequently, whatever they would have done their competitive position could not have changed. These people are being held liable not because their own conduct might have resulted in harm in whatever market they're involved in. It's that they're there to egg on, if you want, the other guys who are active. They're aiding and abetting, if you want, somebody else's agreement. And that's where I think the commission is, why the commission is going after these companies, these individuals. They're in a supporting role, but they're being held liable as co-perpetrators. And I would leave you with this, too, and that is, as far as the consultancies, non-competitors, let's call them market analysts, let's call them research organizations, whatever you want to call them, we're going to see the commission pushing the envelope with these kinds of individuals who are circulating company information. What I find most disturbing of all regarding these the commission's approach on indirect exchange is that there is nothing in these guidelines to suggest that a third party, like a market analyst, if he's given information by someone and he then puts it into a piece of analysis that ends up in the hands of competitors, there's nothing in these guidelines that suggests that as a condition to him being held liable, that he must have known that he is part of a plan by these competitors to circulate information through him as a conduit. So in other words, there's nothing suggesting that the commission must prove that competitors concerted to use these third parties in the way in which they're being used. So that if somebody making organic peroxide goes to this research analyst and feeds him some information, which ends up in a report that he produces, that analyst can end up on the receiving end of liability, even if it is not proven that it was a setup. If that information ends up in the hands of competitors and is then used, if you want, to coordinate prices, because we have the provider of the information, we have the recipient of that information. It is sensitive. It is not historical. You can act on it, right? Well, if it can be acted on, and it's simply a matter of somebody in the middle who's through whom that information is being channeled, it looks to me good enough for the commission to act on it based upon these draft guidelines. I'm not suggesting that it's right. In the op-ed piece that I wrote for the Wall Street Journal, I suggested that in situations like this where you have media concerns, free speech concerns, that the commission at a minimum, should be requiring that there be evidence of concertation among competitors to use an independent third party in this way. I have no indication from the commission that they're willing to take that view.
We should circle back again after these guidelines go into effect to see what the impact has been. Dr. Frank Fine, author of the Emerging Issues Analysis, Information Exchanges Under EU Competition Law, Heading for Regulatory Overload, is available from LexisNexis. Dr. Fine, thank you very much for being part of this LexisNexis legal podcast. I enjoyed our time together.
Me too, Steve. You take care.
Dr. Frank Fine, Director of EC Competition Law Advocates in Brussels. Thank you for listening to this LexisNexis legal podcast. Visit the LexisNexis communities at www.lexisnexis.com/community. The LexisNexis Corporate and Securities Law Community Podcast, copyright 2010 by LexisNexis, a division of Reed Elsevier Incorporated. LexisNexis. I'm Steve Bursler. Thank you for listening.